This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
The ever-popular Gas House Gang. We are off and running on a Tuesday with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Look at that. Nice-looking Cardinals hat right there on my man, Burn. What's going on?
That's St. Louis Browns.
I know. I'm kidding. I want to get you all riled up.
This is a new addition. This is a replica of the cap worn by the last St. Louis Browns team in St. Louis.
Really? The one that went to Baltimore and became the Orioles?
Yeah.
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 Bernie, the Baltimore native, that's a good-looking hat right there. And then Ranch has a nice Cardinals hat on today.
He does.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I have this one on a lot. It's a kind of a go-to.
It is.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot.
Do you want it?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Where the heck's your Indiana cap?
You know, I haven't done that once this year. I think I'm superstitious. I just feel like, at this point, anything I say or do pro-Indiana is going to come back to haunt me. I just want to enjoy it.
Let me give you a pro Indiana note here. ExtraPointsMB.com. A guy named Matt Brown. You've heard of Matt Brown? He covers sports. Yep. Anyway, he reached out to a bunch of universities to see how much beer they sell. Indiana football revenue this year with Indiana beer sales, almost $1 million, $983,000 in beer sales this year. Not bad, buddy. Well, you guys are doing all right.
That's almost St. Louis territory there.
Based on some of the stuff I heard when Ackerman's made some of his pilgrimages there this year, he and his mates, the high percentage of those beer sales, I think they're responsible for. Yeah.
I had a few of those. We might have also had a bottle of bourbon that evening celebrating. Talking some football. Speaking of Indiana, boy, they're just having a ball, aren't they? I mean, the Indianapolis Colts, although they just lost over the weekend, did you see what they just did? They just traded two first-round picks to the Jets for Sauce Gardner, the number one corner in the NFL.
They are feeling it. The Colts are feeling it right now. They figured, we're going to take this record and roll with it.
Man, that is wild. I mean, that is a wild deal. The Cardinals here in St. Louis are starting the offseason. Bernie, I heard you yesterday on Rush Hour Sports. I've heard you with me on Sunday. I mean, this is not going to be, don't go into this offseason if you're a Cardinals fan thinking there are going to be fireworks. But make no mistake about it, there will be change, won't there, Bernie, on this roster?
Yeah, and you know, early on, because, you know, my friends and just, you know, longtime readers or people who follow my career, you know, I get some emails and they ask me, well, you know, realistically, how good do you think the Cardinals can be in 2026? And I don't know, because it's really hard to even come up with a theory, because we don't know what this roster will be by the time that they go to spring training. And in a way, that's really exciting, because I think there'll be a lot of change. But which players off this roster will be traded? And players that are traded, what will the Cardinals get in return? Will they be really good prospects, or will they be a couple of major league ready players? Will there be targeted strikes, not for huge contracts, but how many starting pitchers will Heim Bloom be able to bring in? How many young players will graduate to the major league roster and have a major role in 2026? There are just so many variables, and it's hard to, you know, kind of look ahead and say, okay, this is my best guess on what the roster will look like when they go to spring training. I think that's impossible to do. But that's also one of the things that's kind of exciting, because the Cardinals haven't had this kind of offseason in a long time. And I know it's not the same as like you go into spring training saying, oh, this team can win the World Series. That's what you want to be. But they're rebuilding. To me, there is some fascination in what they're going to look like after Heim Bloom is finished this winter.
Yeah, I think we retired the word runway last year, did we not? Mm-hmm. So that part is over. But this is still a transitional period for the Cardinals. It's not like that part is over yet. And I agree that we could see a competitive team next season, but I would go into it thinking the exact same way I thought about 2025, and that is they're not the favorite. They're probably not going to win the division. They're probably not going to the playoffs. But you never know. Maybe they put it together enough that in this division, though it was a difficult division last year, it's still maybe attainable. But I would not go into the season expecting that this is what it is. I mean, they could surprise us like they did for the first couple of months of 2025, and then maybe it trails off at the end. So it's difficult to completely write them off for 26, but I really wouldn't be betting on them either. And I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but that's exactly how I feel about them.
Well, I expect them to be at least competitive and eye candy, like entertaining. Like, give me some baseball that I can enjoy.
Sure.
I don't expect any superstars to take this team to the next level, because that's what you need. You need superstars if you want to win a championship, and they don't have any. But they have some players who could become that. J.J. Weatherholt's not going to be the next, Hall of Famer, or maybe he is. But he's not Weatherholt is going to come in and be a great baseball player. I don't expect him to carry the franchise to the next level. I'm still waiting for that person. And I think that is the goal here, is to develop a team that they can bring in the next star, whether that's via free agency or trade down the road, or maybe they're going to groom and develop that person. I'll tell you what, though, Bernie, they need a rotation. And Chaim Bloom said that on the show on Sunday. That's his priority. Bernie, they don't have the wherewithal right now. Do they have money? They do. But they're not going to throw money around to go build a rotation. If you want to do that, you've got to trade tradable assets. And I'm sorry to say that there are some people that the Cardinals fans really like that you could trade right now to get pitchers. And one of them is Brendan Donovan. Right. And it's probably time. As much as you love Donnie, he's not going to get you an ace, but he's going to get you something. And there are some others, too, that I think are tradable. I don't want to start trading away this entire team, but let's just be realistic. If the Cardinals want to go places, they're going to have to change up this roster a bit.
I prefer that if he's going to trade Donovan, who I think would have the most trade value, I would prefer that they get a couple of, frontline pitching prospects who are maybe a year or two away from the major leagues, because then they would have them cost controlled for six seasons once they get here. I think he's going to do something that is a combination of that. When he flips Donovan, if he flips Donovan, maybe another left-handed bat or two. I think he'll try to get a starting pitcher that can help them maybe back end for 2026, but also someone who's going to be part of the future, someone who's getting close to the majors, who's got real talent and a lot of upside. I think it'll be a combination, but I do expect him. Listen, one of the things he did, that Tampa Bay system did, is that they took advantage of market inefficiencies, and they always found hidden gem, pitchers and players that they were able to procure at low cost, but those players gave them a great value. And I think he's going to be on the lookout for players and pitchers like that that can help the Cardinals right away in 2026.
And Bernie, you know what? That's where I want them to live right now. And I think this is, it's good for supplemental pieces when you're a pretty good team down the road. For right now, I am perfectly okay with them just operating like that during the off season, where they try to find those, it's not the nicest way to put it, but trash heap guys, guys who haven't really gotten a whole lot of attention or desire from anybody else. And then they make it to the right situation and they contribute. If they operate only like that during this offseason, I am perfectly fine with that. It's 3 years from now. I don't want them to do what Tampa Bay does. You could do a little bit of that, but I don't want that to be the only thing you do. You know what I mean?
No. But I'm always in favor of good players. I don't really care how they get them.
Bets, right? I mean, those are betting that you hope you get something out of them. And if they are a good team 2-3 years from now, I don't want that.
Well, they'll be spending more money by then. Right. Bill DeWitt's philosophy, and it's been proven over time, no matter what critics say, he believes in having stars. The Cardinals have to have stars. He told me the difference between us and Tampa Bay, as much as I love their model and I think it's great, if we develop star players, we want to try to keep them here, where Tampa Bay feels like they have to trade them. So there will be a difference. I know people don't want to be accepted, but I'll take Bill DeWitt on his word.
Remember also that down the road, what do the Cardinals need? They need power. They need lots and lots of power. They really lack it right now. And where do they go in that area, Bernie? Where do you see power? Let me bring up something that Chaim Bloom did do back before he became, well, he was already a star, but now he's a mega star. Chaim did trade, I don't know if this gets talked about enough. Bernie's talked about all of his transactions, I'm sure, but he did trade for Kyle Schwarber in 2021. He added him to the Red Sox when they were making a run. It doesn't tell me that he's going to go do something like that now. It tells me what he values. He values that type of a player. He saw it. Schwarber was going to be a home run machine, and he took a chance on him.
And he'll but I don't – the question is a troubling one, because if you look in their system, okay, Joshua Baez has got clear power potential, but we all know about the word potential. It doesn't mean guaranteed success in the majors. But Baez is a fast riser, and he was the 54th pick in the draft in 2021. It's not like he's just some guy. And he also, in addition to slugging over 500, he stole 54 bases last year in the minor leagues, and he's on the rise. They have a couple other guys, but it's just so hard to project. I think it's the biggest shortage that they have, because you can see some pitchers on the way. You can see some pitchers getting close. You can see Liam Doyle even being here next season at some time. And there's others following. They're doing a really good job with that. But if you look for power potential, it is just really hard to find in their system. So they're going to have to draft it. They're going to have to develop it, or they're going to have to trade for it. And maybe when they're ready, when they're getting close to winning, they think they can get back to the playoffs. Maybe they'll spend some money to try to get some power in the lineup.
And for some perspective on that, the Cardinals had the second fewest amount of home runs in baseball last year. The Pirates were the only team worse. Padres only hit a few more than they did, but the other end of that is the Padres could pitch. They were a good team. Right. So, but yeah, Cardinals have to have more power, because usually it's the teams at the bottom are the ones that don't hit for very many home runs.
True. In the model of Schwarber and players like him, they're not a lot as powerful as he is, but in that type of player, Bernie, does that still play for you as somebody who hits for a very low average but walks a ton and hits for a ton of home runs? Is that attractive to the Cardinals? To me, it is. Give me a guy who can hit the ball out of the ballpark at any given moment.
Yeah, I don't really care about, I never have cared about Schwarber's batting average, because his on-base percentage has always been fantastic, and his slugging speaks for itself. The whole part of baseball, you got 27 outs, so you want guys, especially power hitters, who can change the scoreboard with one swing. You want guys that don't make outs. In other words, if a guy's getting on base nearly 40% of the time, I'll take that over a guy that's hitting 270 but doesn't draw walks. Because the whole thing is avoiding outs, not making outs, getting on base. If you can't hit it over the wall, get on base at a high rate. The old saying, on base percentage is life, and life is on base percentage. And it's true. It's a really, really important thing.
It's something to watch here as the Cardinals change the way they look in the upcoming years under Chaim Bloom. But it starts now. GM meetings are not far away. It's going to be next week in Las Vegas. I think Monday is when they all get together in Vegas and start talking about all of these things. Mitchell said he hoped that Gorman would be that guy that I was just talking about, get a bunch of home runs, even though he strikes out a ton. Really hasn't panned out yet, though. No, it hasn't. But let me close with that. Now, this is a long first segment, but I like it. Bernie, Gorman plays if Arenado gets traded. Arenado has to get traded this offseason, mm-hmm. doesn't he? Even if they unload the money. I don't see it any other way. It's not going to be easy, but nothing is easy when it comes to a player that at this point, at this time in his career, if he wants to play for a contender, he's got to expand that list of places to go, and no I doubt. See it happening.
Listen, there's no reason in the world for the Cardinals to give away Nolan Gorman. In fact, if Chaim Bloom made a trade where they get basically nothing for Gorman, it'll be probably
Arenado, you mean?
I'm talking about if they decide they're going to move on from Gorman, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I apologize for that. I kind of jumped your question. My apologies. There's no way for them to sell low on Gorman. You know why? Because this is a free season. If they trade Arenado, which I believe they will, you can give Gorman the entire season as your third baseman. And I want Heim Bloom and his people to make those evaluations. I don't care what Gorman's done in the past. They're going to have more teachers, instructors help to work with Gorman. The new regime would be irresponsible to give up on him before they have a chance to work with him. Not the old regime, but before they have a chance to make a difference and before they have a chance to fully evaluate him over a full season. It would be stupid to trade him for a low return, in my opinion.
100% agree. I think there's just too much power still unlocked with Nolan Gorman. You just don't give up on that right away. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with much more. The Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. In fact, our visits with Bernie are sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. We're back right after this. Welcome back to the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji, Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Hey, the Blues won a game. Holy cow. They won. They snapped a 7-game losing skid, and they did it in dramatic fashion. They were down 2-0 to the Edmonton Oilers, and they came back and won the game. And it really was sparked, Bernie, by Dalibor Dvorsky, who scored on the power play. That'll get people excited. The first of many for Dvorsky, and then the Blues ended up winning the game on a Pia Suter goal late in the third period. How about the Blues picking one up finally?
I think Dvorsky's looked really good. You know, his first game, he was very good. They didn't win it, but it wasn't because of him. And, you know, it's interesting because when they brought him up, I heard and I saw, you know, some people maybe in our profession, they were talking about, well, this is kind of a panic move. This is really unlike Doug Armstrong. Why is it a panic move when you have a guy you drafted in the first round who you love and is very talented and is ready, and you bring him up because your team needs a shot in the arm? How is that a panic move? It sounds like a smart move to me, but that's just me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and they needed to get a win. It doesn't really matter how they did it. At this point, it was getting out of hand. So I think when you're early in the season, wins are wins, and you want to take them. You also want them to win in, how do I put this? You want them to win in the right way, or at least it sort of indicates to you that, yes, this team has it together. That wasn't a fluke win, right? That they are building on something, and the process is right. So that kind of leads you to believe they're going to have a good season. But because they dropped so many in a row, this was one of those, it did not matter if it was an own goal. Just win the game, because you have to. I am a firm believer in the psychology of this, and if it would have gotten out of hand for them, and you can argue that it almost did, that if it gets to the point where they just get to the rink every night and think, all right, something's going to happen here, something bad's going to happen, they needed to eliminate that. So now it's just hoping that they're able to build on it and move forward from here and do more of that and stop going on these losing streaks.
And real quick, you know, what actually, you know, to me, the best thing about that win last night, they're playing Edmonton, which is a high-powered, high-scoring team with a lot of skill.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Blues were outshot at 5-on-5. They were pretty much had fewer scoring chances, fewer high-danger chances. And Jordan Binnington was money and allowed one goal in. He was under duress. He played great. And their goaltending has statistically been the worst in the National Hockey League this season. So before there's any talk whatsoever of a turnaround and a winning streak and all that stuff, goaltending's got to be money. It was money last night with Binnington.
Yes, it was. Binnington got it done, and the Blues did as well. They also made a trade yesterday, picking up Callie Rosen from the Washington Capitals. And while that doesn't solve everything, it is somebody who has some familiarity with what they're trying to do on the blue line. But don't get too far ahead of yourselves. I saw some people saying, well, that's exactly the move they need. Just let's calm down. I mean, they got Callie Rosen. They're just trying to, you know, tweak some things here and there. But the Dvorsky move, I agree with you. That was definitely a spark. I like that a lot. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to get into Mizzou's chances of beating Texas A&M. I think they might be a little better than people think. That's coming up later in the show on Saturday. The Tigers taking on A&M. Look at Lauren. Lauren's going absolutely nuts. She heard me
say, watch it on Facebook.
She's the best. She heard me, although she's with a Cubs fan in the picture, but which I'm assuming is her significant other. But key dates to know. November 11th is when the general manager's meeting starts, so a week from today. So it would be Tuesday, not Monday, as I had referenced a little earlier. The non-tender deadline, there's the winter meetings dates. Look at Lauren. She's better than AI. December 9th, the amateur draft lottery, Rule 5 draft on the 10th, and the arbitration deadline and international signing period. There you go. You got all your off-season dates as we roll right into the hot stove season. We're going to take a quick timeout, and when we come back, we're going to hear about the Los Angeles Dodgers and what they did to build themselves via Steven Nelson, who is one of their play-by-play men and a good one.
Hi, this is Joe Buck. I used to work at KMOX. My dad used to work at KMOX. And I want to congratulate the radio station, the great KMOX, on 100 years strong as the voice of St. Louis.
Yamamoto's 0-2. Coming to Kirk. Broken back, ground ball. Betts has it, steps on the bag. The throw to first, double play! From backs against the wall to back to back. The Dodgers cement their dynasty.
The voice of Steven Nelson, Dodgers play-by-play, joining us now on the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Steven, it's a pleasure to have you on KMOX Radio, and congratulations on another world championship.
Fellas, good morning. I appreciate you guys having me on.
It's
How are you guys living?
Living well, although you can stop now. You're two away from the Cardinals at 11. We would like you to stop right there at 9. That's enough. That is enough. We've had it.
Hey, as we say farewell to Clayton Kershaw, I know there are multiple generations of Dodger fans who still have not forgiven St. Louis for some of those heartbreaking postseason moments that are still linger large on the minds of many Dodger fans. So I think they definitely want to catch those Redbirds.
You know, Steve and Bernie Miklas here, I was writing about something with the Dodgers, and I realize, you know, they've made the playoffs every year since 2013. So it's hard, like, back in my memory banks, I can still see that Matt Adams home run. But what amazes me is that that was the beginning of what truly is. We overuse the word dynasty in sports. That was the beginning. Even though they lost that series, the fact they were in the postseason, that was the beginning of the Dodgers dynasty that just keeps rolling. How much longer can they do this, in your opinion?
Well, I think, I don't know that there's an answer to that question, just simply because the way that this ownership group and the front office regime, you know, which has, you know, been in power for, going on a decade and a half now, they are in lockstep with the same mission. And it's a mission that I think should be shared by every team in every sport, and that is to win and to repay the fan base. You know, it's becoming harder and harder to become a sports fan given all the different platforms you got to subscribe to stream and watch games, just going to a game for a young family, a family of four, like it's become an investment. And so the Dodgers have stated publicly over and over again that their mission is just to pay back the fans. And so I think given the fact that they have committed to investing into the team, while also investing into sustainability, they have the number one farm system, according to MLB Pipeline, and I just think it's a juggernaut that has shown no signs of slowing down and certainly has no intent of slowing down either. You know, 13 straight postseason berths. It's tied for, you know, those Yankees from the mid-90s into the 2000s for the second longest streak, and they trail only the Atlanta Braves, that dynasty from the early 90s, who had it 14 straight years. And, you know, I think the hope and assumption is that the Dodgers will match that mark next year.
And I know they get a lot of criticism because of the gigantic payroll, and there are fans of teams that say we can't possibly compete with what they do. But would you say that they are where they are as an organization simply because of payroll, or what else do you believe they are doing correctly?
Well, I think there's no question that that helps, right? It'd be silly to pretend that it doesn't when you invest that much into the on-field product, not just at the major league level, but throughout the minor leagues as well, and the player development and the drafting and development, the scouting, all that. Like it's all encompassing, right? And when you have, you know, the smartest people led by Andrew Friedman, who's a Hall of Fame executive. So what he did and built in Tampa Bay, now with the resources of the Los Angeles Dodgers and the market of LA, like, you know, that's a deadly combo, a dangerous combo. You know, the other elephant in the room is the television contract, right? And, like, that is a huge separator in, you know, the volatile landscape that is sports television and, you know, regional networks and where the league may want to go and kind of centralizing things. Like, you know, for now, like, that's a huge I guess, weapon for the Dodgers that, you know, that's at their disposal. But again, like, I think, you know, the people who would say, like, oh, we can't do that, my response would be a question. And it's, are you sure? Because, you know, somebody put this out there online where it's the profit of each team. This is based on, you know, publicly available data, right? The profit of every team, and then how much profit goes back into the team, into the payroll, and the percentage of every single team and how they redistribute that profit. And I think it's pretty eye-opening, you know, how much if certain teams do or don't reinvest into their product and reinvest into their fan base. So, you know, and I think, you know, folks may be listening to this and kind of rolling their eyes because, yeah, I get a paycheck for the Dodgers. But Chris, as you know, my sports fans – roots, I grew up a diehard Chicago White Sox fan. Okay, so I think I could speak to the experience.
I'm sorry.
Of, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Dad. I really appreciate that. No, so I just think that you know, how do I say this fairly and properly? I think you just have to kind of examine each individual organization and ask, are they really doing everything they can to win? And I'm not sure that every team or even most teams can answer yes.
And they're not just winning on the field, but they're winning globally. I mean, the marketing of the Los Angeles Dodgers, you know, when you go to New York and people come in to the United States, sometimes for the first time, and they're tourists in New York, they buy a Yankees hat. They don't buy a Mets hat. They buy a Yankees hat because that's the global brand. Los Angeles, it's the Dodgers. And now, speak to this if you would, Shohei Ohtani, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Roki Sasaki. More and more people around the world are paying attention to Los Angeles Dodgers. I think you could go so far as to say they are right there with the most popular sports brands in the world right now.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's been a focus throughout history, guys. Like, you know, in kind of the Dodgers' efforts to grow the game in different markets, to go into different places, whether it be Fernando Mania, you know, Fernando Valenzuela, we just celebrated the late legend's birthday the other day. What he did for baseball in Mexico and globally, you know, Hideo Nomo, 30 years ago in this season, the anniversary of, you know, his historic move from NPB to Major League Baseball and how that really opened the floodgates for all the talent you're referencing on this year's club with Ohtani, Yamamoto, and Sasaki. And, you know, in recent years, they've also made it a point to go into Africa and scout there and build out a facility down there that, you know, is not just for scouting. It's, you know, part of humanitarian efforts. Like that global focus is intentional and it's very top of mind for them. And so if you just look at it from the Japanese standpoint, what, you know, having that trio on this roster winning a world championship has done, I don't even know how to comprehend it or measure it. But I think now that you have kind of turned Japan into Dodger blue again, and you're going to have generations of kids, you know, not just in Southern California, but also in Japan now, you know, kind of being born into that LA logo and that blue hat, I think that's a really powerful thing to think about.
Steven, I wanted to ask you about Dave Roberts. I thought for a long time he kind of got a raw deal from the standpoint of, like, well, anybody could win with that team type of thing. And so every time they came up short in the postseason, a lot of it was put on him, which I didn't think was fair. But in your opinion, how do you think he has evolved? Do you think that he is starting, or he has gotten the appreciation that he deserves, you know, having led the Dodgers, been part of such a successful run?
No, I don't think so. And I think you're kind of spot on there because of the pushback of, well, anybody could win with that talent. But, I mean, there have been really talented Dodger teams, you know, that haven't won since Doc has been here. I think he is really – I think some of the shortcomings or the the World Series losses, the postseason defeats, I think the last 2 years have really illustrated, if you watch the games, just how much Dave Roberts has grown as a manager. And Doc would be the first to tell you that, like, he has had to learn some really hard lessons in that chair. And I think he's kind of shown the last 2 years that he's really earned these two rings in 2024 and 2025. And that's to say nothing of 2020 and having to navigate the bubble. I know people like to make fun of it because of the shortened season, but just trying to transport ourselves back to that time and what the world was going through and just how crazy everything was and navigating that bubble, I think Doc maintains that was one of the hardest years he's had as in professional baseball. But, you know, I think back to last year, you know, leaving Blake Treinen in, you know, when he's north of 40 pitches and having to, you know, basically use bullpen games when their season was on the line in the division series. He had 2.5 starting pitchers to turn to and just sort of having a feel and a pulse and pushing the right buttons. And, you know, this year not having a bullpen at all and, you know, kind of leaning on starters and putting starters into the bullpen and, again, pushing the right buttons, the substitutions, you know, going to Miguel Rojas in Game 6. And Rojas had one of the biggest swings in Dodger history in Game 7. You know, I just think that he's really earned the flowers over the last 2 years. And, you know, he's certainly validated what is now a Hall of Fame resume. And, you know, he's still got many years ahead of him. So I don't think he's gotten the credit, but I hope that that'll change as time goes on.
I know that the narrative has been once this work stoppage it happens, and it seems likely, and of course it could be avoided. I mean, we'll see that it's over a year away from now that mm-hmm. would happen. There's a growing sentiment, it feels like, to getting a salary cap. I hear a lot of fans say there should be one. Owners, of course, would love to have a salary cap. But is the idea popular there, whether it's with the organization or with the fan base?
That's actually a great question. I don't know. I've never asked anybody about it. The coaches at the front office, I have, and that really never comes up with fans. I just think that they're sort of enjoying this ride. If you were to ask my personal thoughts on it, like I just to our earlier conversation, I don't know that is the solve for what fans are kind of projecting, because I do think it's a lot of projection. It's just it's misdirected emotions and frustrations with the fact that their teams aren't doing everything that they can and should be doing to win. I don't think anybody's talking about the fact, like the Mets had that they didn't make the postseason, right? A couple years ago, the top three teams in payroll didn't make the postseason. You know, going back to 2000, there have been 16 different World Series champions. That is more than any other major sports league in North America, and all those leagues have what in common? A salary cap. In the last decade in Major League Baseball, every single team in the league has made the playoff at least once. So is it a question of cap or is it a question of true competition? I know some people think that those two are tied together. I am not so certain about that. So I am worried about what is on the horizon. I hope that, you know, all parties can kind of get on the same page and sort of continue to ride the momentum that the league has right now, which I do think they do have as a sport, Major League Baseball. If you know, that dreaded L word does come to fruition, I shudder to think about what could happen. So that would be my personal take, but I couldn't speak for anybody else, you know, on players on the team or staff.
Dodgers play-by-play announcer Steven Nelson with us on the Gas House Gang. We played your calls throughout the series. It was a lot of fun to hear you, and what a terrific series and win in Game 7. And give our best to Tommy Edman, will you? We love Tommy, so we appreciate
Oh, my
you.
Gosh. What a saint. What an actual saint that man is.
He sure is. He's incredible.
Tom, Chris, Bernie, I again, appreciate the time. Sorry for rambling, not shutting up.
Well, that's why we got you here. We don't want to talk.
Great.
That's why we're talking to you.
Hey, well, anytime you want to lose listenership, you guys give me a ring, okay?
It was awesome. We'd love to have you again. Thank you, Steven.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Happy holidays.
Steven Nelson of the Dodgers broadcast team. They are a great listen. We'll come right back with another segment of the Gas House Gang. Have some thoughts as to how Missouri can take down Texas A&M on Saturday, and it's not as complicated as you would think. Back after this.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Tonight at 7 o'clock Central Time on ESPN, they will reveal the college football playoff rankings. Don't know what they're going to be, but eventually, we'll find out when the season comes to an end where everybody's going to be playing. 12 teams will make it. It'll be Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, some combination. Those five, somebody's going to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't think it'll be outside of those five. Probably you could leave Georgia out, too. I think Bama, A&M, Ohio State, Indiana, some combination there, depending on what the bias is of the committee at the time. I will say this about this weekend. Everyone's assuming that Missouri is going to get run over by Texas A&M. The spread's 7.5 right now, and I think that's about right. I think
touchdown sounds right.
And if you're looking at a one possession game, Missouri can do this, and here's the only way they can. There are two things, actually. One, they have a really good defense. This will be statistically the best defense that Texas A&M has played. Only Oklahoma and Texas have a better defense right now in the SEC than Missouri. And Missouri has, make no mistake about it, a defense. I mean, a legitimate SEC defense. And with that, you can get off the field and get your offense out there. And Missouri lost by 3 to a very good, as we found out, Alabama team. And the reason was not because just that Perbula threw some picks, not because they made some mistakes. Bernie, in my estimation, Missouri lost the game because they handed the ball to Ahmad Hardy 12 times.
Yeah.
12 times. I mean, run the football against Texas A&M. They have the 33rd ranked rushing defense in the country, and Missouri has not the third best, not the second best. No team in the SEC runs the ball better than Missouri, Bernie. They've got to use that to their advantage.
Listen, it wasn't just Ahmad Hardy. To my discovery, because I was like, well, how come they haven't used Jamal Roberts much? He went through those games at Alabama and Auburn, against Alabama and Auburn, where they hardly used him. I think he got like 6 or 7 carries. And I'm like, why are they abandoning the run? They have two great backs. What up with this? So they sort of got back into that against Vanderbilt, and they had more success. Listen, they cannot afford to get into a bunch of 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, and so on. I think Matt Zollers, as a true freshman quarterback, was very impressive what he did at Vanderbilt. The poise was there. The arm strength is there. He spins the ball well, accurate. You can understand why he was such a top recruit. However, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but believe me, I researched it. Texas A&M with Mike Elko, they have a tremendous pass defense on third down. I mean, tremendous. In fact, they have not allowed a single touchdown pass on third down this season. And the point being, if Mizzou puts Zollers in a bad spot on third downs, Texas A&M will eat him alive.
They will.
I think that's a key to everything.
You've got to run the ball first and second down and get those third and shorts. And Zollers is decent, but you know, Zollers isn't going to win the game for you. Running the football, he could if you put him in position.
I thought his first game was terrific.
I love the way he spins it. But, you know, if they stack the box against that run, he can burn you if you're going one-on-one. But, man, the defense and the run game, there's a chance there for Missouri. I'm just saying. And if they do, I think they're back in the conversation, but they'd have to run the table after that.
Look, the one thing, this is all great and everything. I just want to know what's going to go wrong for Indiana and Happy Valley this weekend.
No comment, sir. We're just going to let our play speak for itself.
There you go.
We're doing just fine.
I love it.
Thank you very much. Kurt Cignetti will pretend like that's Penn State from, you know, back in Joe Paterno's days, undefeated national champions. He'll have that team ready. Don't you worry.
Joe Paterno ain't walking through that door.
Don't you worry.
There you go.
Thanks for joining us with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. We say so long from Studio B. Bernie's visit sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer.